All right, welcome into the hours. I'm Mark. I'm joined by Tyler, and we've got one of my favorite topics today. We're going to talk some practice planning, and in particular, how to design a practice. A lot of our members are reaching out, sharing their practice plans, asking for feedback, or we just have, you know, topics coming up in the community saying, hey, first week of practice or first couple games of the season, and I feel like my team needs to tackle X, Y, or Z. So Tyler and I are going to have a conversation, and Tyler's going to shape how we're going to do this for us. But the idea is that we're going to give you some objectives, and we'll share how we would incorporate these into practice so your team can get some noticeable improvement in a short amount of time.
Well said, Mark. I've been listening to other podcasts lately, and they do two things that we don't normally do at the beginning, and I don't know if we should do them. But I'm going to do them today, and then we'll get some feedback. One, this is the Hours, put on by Savvy Basketball. Welcome. At Savvy Basketball, we're revolutionizing the way that the game of basketball is being taught and played. And we've seen such great traction from that, both through this podcast and from our membership, that we recently launched TOC Coach, which is revolutionizing the art of coaching and culture for coaches and leaders of all sports, not just basketball. That's how committed to this that we are. So that's why we do what we do. That's who we are. That's how you can find us. That's why Mark and I do the Hours every single week. The second thing that they do at a lot of these other podcasts is they often have guests. We don't have guests as often. We are the guests. And they tend to give a background on the guest. And I realize that if someone's listening to us for the first time, they have no clue who we are. And we are getting hundreds of new listeners every single week. So welcome if you're one of those new listeners. My name's Tyler. Mark and I are partners in Savvy Basketball. We both come from a college coaching background, as well as a personal training background. We're clinicians and speakers who have traveled the country speaking at coaching clinics and consulting for coaches. And so while neither of us head coach at the college level or the high school level right now, we do coach at the youth level as we're coaching our kids. And we do get to coach hundreds of other coaches who are actively coaching their teams as we consult for them regularly. And so we take these lessons that we see relevant right now in today's game, and we share them with you. Lastly, Mark and I are creators of systems. So we have each created separately and together offensive and defensive systems like the lock left and race in space and drive in space that are used by thousands of coaches all across the world. And so that's what we do. And that's our background. So I realized I was listening to the background of the Brooklyn Nets director of ops recently on the Slapping the Glass podcast. And I was interested in his background. So maybe you're interested in ours. So I thought we'd share it as we haven't done that in a while.
Yeah, I'm glad you did that. We probably should do that a little bit more.
Yeah, I probably did it too long today, but it was my first time. I'll get better. So we're diving into practice. So here's the game. We're going to go back and forth. I'm going to give Mark an objective, and he is going to give me three teaching points, principles, approaches, ways to achieve that objective in practice. And then I'm going to start, bench, and cut his three ideas. So I'm gonna say, okay, one of those ideas, that's my starter. I'll keep the second one on the bench, but it's not as good as the starter. And I'm fully cutting this third one because it's not up to standard. So that'll be fun. And then we'll flip it. And Mark will give me an objective. I'll give him off the cuff, no prep, three ideas. And he's going to start, bench, and cut my ideas as well. And hopefully what you can take away from this whole process is ideas win. The best ideas win. We're not attached to whose idea it is, only can it help? Is it valid? Let's test it. And it's a fun exercise when we chop up ideas and not people. And that's how you can also run things on your coaching staff. All right. Am I giving you one first, Mark? Or are you giving me one?
I'll put myself on the hot seat. You can give me one.
Gosh, see, I love that about you. all right. Here's the objective. We just need to compete harder. Like we need to be tougher. We're soft. Like they're more physical than us. They care about winning more than us. There's more fire. We got to compete harder. What do we do?
Instantly, my mind goes, well, we got to play some games, and we've got to design those games where it's sink or swim. Want these to be really player led, and just a couple off the bat would be, I got to give you three things here. So one, Everything's competitive. We're going to compete. Let's make sure we're keeping score in every game that we play. Second, let's make sure that we are designing or adding some constraints. So we're actually designing the games to be more effort based instead of technique.
What would be an example of that? What do you mean?
So, here's one that I like. We called it three and out. You got to get three stops in a row before you get out of the hole, which is the hole meaning play defense. So I like to do this in three teams of four. The light colored team is going to be on defense first. Usually put like my captain or like who's my best leader, just nastiest dude or dudette on defense first. And you got two teams that are going to rotate in on offense. If, let's say, the dark team scores, they stay on offense. That other team stays on defense. We play. If the defensive team gets a stop, the offensive teams will rotate. So new offense comes on and we play until you get three stops. In this game, you're going to find out who your tough players are by the way that they play, but also by the way they respond to adversity, because there is nothing that hurts worse is when you get down the one stop. So you've got two stops under your belt and then you give up an offensive rebound put back. But I think it's a great one where like coaches don't have to intervene. In fact, I like to play this one where coaches don't say anything. We're not helping you. If you're getting killed on, you know, by maybe your first shot defense is good, and you're getting offensive rebound putbacks, like, hey, be aware, figure it out. Somebody say something, somebody make an adjustment somewhere. So that would be my number two. Okay. Make sure that we have constraints. Number three, I would start every activity with something that we would call toughness. So before practice, I would ask my players, what is toughness? Like, we've got to be a tougher team. When you think of a tough team, what is that? And if somebody says, getting a loose ball, okay, like I think that's pretty tough. Well, before we play one-on-one today, and I'm not saying roll the ball on the floor and have two people dive on each other and hurt each other, but I'm just going to throw a ball out there. And Mark and Tyler are partners. If Tyler gets the ball, he gets to play offense. And then the next rep, Mark, you don't automatically play offense. Whoever gets the ball gets to play on offense. So if we were playing one-on-one, we could do that 5-on-5 instead of playing from like check it up or under out of bounds. We're starting with a shot and a rebound, something like that, where we're just making sure that we're threading, creating that through line, as we've been saying with our members throughout practice on toughness.
Okay. I like it. Let me summarize and then start bench and cut. One, make sure everything's a game where you have a winner or a loser. It's sink or swim. Two, use constraints that constrain to effort. And three, lock your start. Start with a thing that everyone agrees is tough. I'm going to start locking your start, your third one. That's what I'm going to start. I like it because it's just simple. It's specific. It's applicable. Everyone can make that change right now. We're not going to start from neutral. We're going to start with toughness. So we're going to get lots of teachable moments. I'm going to keep on the bench. I'm going to bench games. I'm going to bench play more games. Here's why. I agree with it.
We should already be doing it.
Yeah, you should already be doing it, right? And I'm going to cut the constraint because I think what I'm starting is a constraint. And I'm going with simplicity wins. I want this specific constraint as opposed to just the generality of the constraint. And I like this starting thing as over the three and out thing. That was me.
Love. That was fun.
Okay. Good stuff. Hit me.
All right. My objective for practice is to get my teams to be better spaced.
Spacing.
This could be full court or half court. We just on offense, we are all over the place clogging.
Yeah. One, five clearly defined roles. That will at least mean we start in shape. Less freedom, more definition and constraint. I believe that the more you limit someone, the more freedom they actually have. When paralysis by analysis is a real thing, the more options someone has, the slower they move and the less effective they are. So we're just going to do really clearly defined roles. This is where you go every time. One job, zero excuses. Number two, we are going to play small-sided 70% or more of practice. I want them to feel what space feels like, and I'm going to create advantage for them, make it easy for them to feel space. The quickest way to space is to not play 5-on-5, to play 3-on-3. They're going to have more space. And then we create teachable moments, be like, hey, did you like that? Here's why you like that, right? Here's the specific things that happened when we played 3-on-3. The ball had space to drive. You had more space to cut. That's what we want you to feel like when playing 5-on-5. And that's why we're doing these other things. Last focus. So that's going to be small-sided games. The last piece for space. Script more. So playing off the ball and playing in space takes a long time to learn, and it's difficult. And we do believe in principles over plays here at Savvy. I'm not saying run plays. I'm saying script your actions more. So to say, this is the action that we are always running first. And this action, because we're doing one action a lot, they're going to learn how to space better because of that action. The space is going to create, the action is going to create the space for them. So script more. Okay, give me a start bench cut.
That's a different game.
That was the inspiration for this game.
All right, five clearly defined roles. I'm going to start that one because if we don't start spaced, it's really hard to get there, right? And usually you can get your team to arrive spaced and organized faster than you can to get them to reshape. Yes. I think reshaping or respacing is like layer two or like the next part of that. So that's my start. And I'll say this. You talked about like the more you limit, the more clarity they have. It's like structure to unstructure. If we give you structure, then we can add some unstructure in lately. A quote that we talk about a lot is it takes a lot of discipline to play with freedom. If, something that I love that we teach at Savvy is we hunt nines with the ball, nines being a big advantage or wide open layup, and we hunt space without the ball. Well, if the other four players are not hunting space, we're probably not going to get any nines because the player with the ball is hunting a nine and they're not going to be attacking space. The other players aren't going to get sevens because they aren't spaced either. And I did a program clinic this past weekend, and that was a huge unlock for the varsity boys basketball team I worked with. Is when they did not have the ball, they were hunting the ball, and it was they were chasing the ball all around, and no one was getting good shots. Instantly, when I said, "Hey, if you just hunt space, you'll actually get the shots that you want." Instead of you finding the ball will find you. And we watched some film in the classroom, went back on the court, and it was like aha moments all over the floor. Okay, so that's easily my start. My bench is going to be small-sided games. I'm going to go in order here. So it's going to be small-sided games, but what I would say, this may have been my start if these small-sided games were big advantage small-sided games, meaning the offensive team had one or more players than the defensive team, because then it's so much easier for players to hold space or gravity because there's less people on the floor and they are open. It removes the, I need to go get open and get the ball. And then script more, the reason why this would be my cut, it would be because if we're not spaced, then we can't run an action. I'm a big believer in if we can just establish or create spacing, then we can do absolutely anything that we want, especially if we can arrive spaced and then reshape throughout a possession. You can unlock so many things like burn cuts or, you know, adding this particular action in or adding this, you know, movement off the ball. You can do all of that if you start with spacing. But if you're not spaced, if you don't do number one here in those clear defined roles to get there, then you might not get that action. So that'd be my cut.
I think that I need to, next time I do this, list all three beforehand and then mix up the order, because whenever I come up, I'm gonna go first to last.
Yeah,
as well.
Well, and for appeal behind the curtain for those that are listening, we did not tell the other person what objective we're giving them, so we're literally coming up with these on the fly as we would if we were just in our office designing a practice. So it's not like we've had time to think these out.
Well, here you go, Mark. Here's on the fly for you.
All right.
Yeah. Okay. I want better ball handling on my team. Like, we can't dribble. We turn it over a lot. And when we get pressured, we can't relieve the pressure by beating the defender. We just pick up the ball. So we just need better ball handling. How do we do that?
Oh, yeah. This one's tough. all right. Number one, I would always have a defender, but I would even the playing field. And when I say always have a defender, I'm just meaning like, think of your traditional ball handling drills that you might do. Like, we want to have like some kind of contact, some type of defender in there that we're actually having to work around something that's either guided or live. So I'd always do that, but I would level the playing field. I would probably have defense play with the ball or give them some type of constraint to where our players could feel what it feels like to handle the ball. And I would take them. So this is all number one here. Let's just do this. Four levels of ball handling that I've learned from Tyler Costin is north, south, east, west, change of pace, and then last would be cleverness. I would just take them through that progression there. That's how it established the foundation for ball handling that we could then reference. Okay, so that would be one. Number two is, I'm going to go back to constraints here. I would first identify whether these were skill or decisions. It sounds like they're skill. So I would just figure out what's happening a lot and make sure that we add constraints to recreate that. So I heard you say, like, when we're pressured, we can't handle the ball, we throw the ball away. I would play a game like no dribble. That's just going to make us be really tough, see the defense, anticipate passes, and get open for each other. It's kind of the opposite of the spacing one, is like, does my teammate need help or space? If they can't dribble, they're not hunting nines, so they need help. And then last, I would, gosh, this is not going to be a great one. I would make sure we have a clear measurement of what we're doing. So let's say we identified the skill and it's passing. I would just make sure we had a very clear measurement of what we were going to use to define our victory for ball handling.
Nice. Okay. I'm going to break the entire game, and you're always welcome to do that as well. I'm not going to start any of the things that you said. Instead, I'm going to start one of my own ideas, and I'm going to actually start homework basketball. Both Mark and I grew up with Pistol Pete Maravich's VHS homework basketball. And I tell you what, nearly every night I would have that VHS in there until I didn't have to have the VHS in there. And I was doing it in my living room, and I was the best ball handler on every team I ever played on.
All right. I'm really glad you broke the rules there, because, as you mentioned, we're both coaching a youth team. Our very first practice of this season, all the girls are in the gym. They're shooting around. I huddle them up. I'm going to introduce myself and go through all this. And as I'm talking, I see like a circle with everybody with a ball in their hands. And I'm like, all right, before we break this circle, everybody squeeze the ball out of your hands and stab it back and forth and go around your back. So that is actually where I started with some homework basketball. And I would agree, like, teaching, I think that is where I do agree that like ball handling is getting where you need to go with the ball. It's not just dribbling. But I've also defined like ball handling as like those homework basketball is handling the ball. It's like hand quickness, hand strength, coordination, all those things is like a really, really good foundation if you want to be a dribbler and eventually a good ball handler.
Absolutely. Okay. And I agree with you. And practice is not the place for this. Practice is at the youth level once per week, at the professional level once per week again, but at the higher, at the college level, five times a week for a few hours. And that's when you have adversaries with you. The majority of your time on your game, players, is alone. And it is important to learn to handle the basketball alone, all these things. So I would say, assigning homework basketball as homework basketball, you do it on your own. That's how you get a better ball handling team. Guess what, coaches? You won't get a better ball handling team in practice within one season. It's not going to happen. But all these other skills, like getting to where you want to go on the floor with the skill set that you currently have, you can get better at that within a season. but you're not going to develop ball handling in your practices. So that's what I'm starting, is starting the habit of working on your own and educating them on what it should be. The best ball handlers all do that. I didn't become a good ball handler. No good ball handler I know became a good ball handler because of what they did with a coach or with a trainer. None. Right? If you've got to pay someone to teach you to be a good ball handler, you're wasting your money. You have to do that on your own. So that's my start. I'm going to bench 1v1 ball handling because I really do believe that. And I think that teaches so many things that you can't get when you're alone. Just playing one-on-one is huge. So that's what I'm going to bench, and then I'm going to cut everything else.
Got it. All right. Shout out Homework Basketball. It's always a good podcast when we're talking homework basketball.
It's always a good podcast. I actually am – I'm sure it's on YouTube.
All right. Next objective is we just got to get better at finishing.
Okay. I'm going to take – talk more for 30 seconds because I want to think and then rearrange. Talk about finishing a little bit more and define it and what it means.
Yeah. So finishing would be, you know, shots off the dribble, as I find, which would be what a coach would want to tackle. Like usually when you get a layup or a finish off a cut, it's typically for a 9. So those are going to be your more open ones. So when I'm picturing my team needs to be better at finishing, I'm picturing my team driving to the basket and taking some layups or some shots that are not wide open, but they're semi-contested. We got to play through some contact. Maybe our drive is getting widened a little bit and we're getting a lot of those shots, but we're shooting at a really poor clip or poor percentage there.
That was really helpful for me. Thank you. I didn't listen to anything that you said. I was writing down.
But it gave you some time.
And then I mixed it up. So beautiful. One, strength. We're just going to get stronger. We're not going to focus on any technique. We're just going to get stronger. We're going to get in the weight room. We're going to prioritize strength because the best finishers are always the strongest players. And it's amazing the confidence that comes from feeling someone bounce off of you. So we're going to install a year-round strength training program. And it's just going to, if you have players on your team that can't do 20 push-ups in a row, you probably shouldn't do anything else until they do 20 push-ups. It will make them, being able to do 20 push-ups in a row will help them become a better basketball player faster than anything else. Just adding strength, anything else. Defense, rebounding, running, finishing, shooting, everything that you can think of, confidence, everything. Strength, strength, strength. In fact, I feel like that's the basis of basketball. If you're starting a long-term development program, is movement and strength. Can they move places faster? You know, people say footwork. I actually don't believe in footwork. I just believe in movement patterns. Footwork helps you move. So let's see, outcome, movement. We don't use the same footwork. Anyway, movement and power. That's it. And you're going to be a varsity level basketball player with zero skill if you can move better than people and are stronger than people. It's that simple. All right. Strength. Guess what? That wasn't even my number one, but I put it number one. And maybe it moved up for me. Two, one single tool. One finishing move that's unique to you. Mark's a fast player. I give him a stretch tool because he's going to have defenders on his back more, right? I've got a strong player. I'm going to give him a power finish tool. I've got a clever player that's a little bit slower. I'm going to give him a spin move, right? I've got a bigger player. I'm going to give him a jump hook. You know, I've got a real shifty player. I'm going to give him an inside hand duck under. So whatever, like one tool per player that fits their game and developing that single finishing tool. You know, maybe you go more macros, just like playing off two. Right? I think playing off two is actually more of a passing tool than a finishing tool, but fine. Three, just play a ton of one-on-one because when you have no one to pass to, you got to finish. And you're going to be in very bad situations where you have to learn to get creative and finish. So those are my three.
All right, good. I like these. Starting, just play a ton of one-on-one.
My starter too. I put it last. I tried to trick you.
Yeah, I've always said when coaches would reach out about protection plans, like how do I get my teams, my players to utilize protection plans more? We're teaching it, but it's not showing up in the game. My first question is always, how much one-on-one are you playing? Because you said it yourself, like when you remove other solutions, because typically when players don't use those protection plans, they're driving and like throwing the ball somewhere, right? Mm-hmm. Or forcing up a tough shot. But if we remove the other solutions of passing, then you have to get a shot. And then you can add some constraints around that. But just playing one-on-one, I think, is a great shot selection tool. Along those lines, I'm surprised you didn't say eliminate bad shots. That's what I would probably start. Is we're probably taking too many of these, so can we take less of these and find maybe turn that five into a seven somewhere? Mm-hmm. But playing one-on-one is a great way to address this. I'm going to go with strength as my bench. And you said it, like it's movement and strength is like the basis of all basketball. Being able to do 20 push-ups doesn't necessarily make you a better basketball player. You have to make sure to apply that strength. So what I mm-hmm. would say is it increases your action capacity. So if you've got a player that can squat 400 pounds and bench 250 pounds, awesome. Like he'd be a really good power lifter, not necessarily a good basketball player unless he knows how to apply it. So we're increasing his action capacity, meaning he can do more athletically on the basketball court. And getting them to apply those in basketball would be where the money is. So I would cut one tool that fits per player. And the reason why that was my cut, not that it's not good, good teaching or sound advice, it would be, I think most players gravitate to something that you teach. So if we taught maybe three of these finishes, I think the players would typically gravitate what comes more natural to them.
It's good. Okay. Since this is the last one, and I think we've done two each. Is that correct?
Yes.
I'll give it to you. You give one. I'll give one. Then you'll give one. That'll give you some time. And then we together will both, after hearing all three, we will start, bench, and cut.
Loving it.
We need to improve at rebounding. Let me talk. Let me vamp for a little bit for you here. How do I know this, you ask? How do I know we need to improve at rebounding? Well, here's what I've measured. I have chosen not to measure raw rebounding numbers, which can vary drastically from game to game and opponent to opponent. Like we had 20 rebounds or 15 rebounds or 30 rebounds or whatever. But I'm honing in on our defensive rebound percentage, which is of all field goals attempted that were missed, right? All missed field goals. This is what percent of those opportunities that we actually defensive rebounded. So our percentage can come very easily, right? Field goal attempts minus field goal makes divided by rebounds, defensive rebounds. And that will give us like what percent we've gotten. Yeah. And if you want to add in free throws, you can add in free throw misses as well to your total field goal misses. And so you'll get your percent. It's not going to be 100. If it is, you did the math wrong. It's going to be a fraction of that expressed as a percent. Mark, before we go here, what do you think would be a good benchmark for a coach as far as defensive rebounding percentage? Because I think that's like a tough one. It's like, okay, we know what it is and we know we want to get better, but like what's good?
I'd say really good, like elite, something to like really strive for would be 80%.
Okay. Yeah. And I was thinking 70 would be a good start. So I think we're in the same ballpark.
Yeah. Anywhere 70 to 80, you're winning games.
Yeah, exactly. Honestly, that might be the first one is measure it. Okay. That's going to be mine. Sorry. I went first.
Okay.
Was that one of yours or no?
It was not really. No.
Okay. So measure defense rebound percentage and share it with your team. I'm betting that you as a listener right now, coach, are not doing that in that way regularly enough, because that which you measure will improve. So that is my proposal for improvement.
Yeah. Common question we get is I'm going to deviate here just for a second. Offensive rebounding percentage, 40 would be elite. Let's say you had just like the best rebounding game, because you're always going to have your best rebounding game of the season and your worst rebounding game of the season, no matter how good or bad you are.
Yeah.
Let's say this is your best rebounding game. Well, your rebounding percentage would add up to 120. 80%. Let's say we went the 80 that I threw out there for defensive rebounding. Mm-hmm. We got 40. It means we got 120% rebounding percentage. You're going to win. You can win games. A good benchmark barometer would be if offensive and defensive rebounding percentage add up to 100. So that's kind of the sweet spot there. So maybe it's like a 70-30 type thing. Even if you only get 60% of your defensive rebounds, but you got 40 of your offensive, you're, you know, one's helping the other out.
That'd be a really cool macro to track visually as well, right? Of like, you know, your offense, your defensive rebound percent, your offensive rebound percent, and then the total, and then over time. That would be very interesting.
Yeah. And you know, another thing too, is like when you get into these four factor stuff or just statistics, it's like, well, these all, you know, rebounding is going to help complement your effective field goal percentage, which is a more important metric to win games, because offensive, if you're getting 40% of your offensive shots that are not made, well, you're probably making 65% of those second shots. Mm-hmm. So that's going to boost your effective field goal percentage. Or if you get a defensive rebounding, well, now we got a better chance to go get something in transition. So, all right. Long way to say where I was going to start, and not necessarily my most important. I was just kind of going chronologically here, is because I really love my next one, but I'm going to go with this one first. I would start with film. And the lens that I would look at it from would be, how well do we rebound when the opponent takes the shots that we want them to take versus the shots that they want to take? So if they're getting nines and sevens, it doesn't give us a great chance to be good defensive rebounders for two reasons. One, they're going to make more of those shots, so there's less available rebounds to get. But two, their offensive rebounders can anticipate offensive rebounds because they, you know, click it for a one more, and it's like, oh, Tyler's taking a corner three. Well, I'm going to go crash the boards and get this offensive rebound. Mm-hmm. So I would look at that like, okay, so when we force the shots that we want, they're less predictable. They are tough twos. So rebound, you know, long shot, long rebound, short shot, short rebound, medium shots that I would allow, that I would want to give up, medium rebounds, which is typically where the defense is in the possession. So I'd look at it first through that lens. Yours was measure. So should I go with my last one?
Yes. And I have another one. So we're giving.
Okay. Mine would be a game that we call cutthroat. And I could probably have answered all of these with cutthroat. It's a, it's the number one way that I've used to just drastically increase awareness and in execution in something. And the game would be, it's three teams of four. You're only scoring stops. But the violation, the constraint is if you don't rebound, or you know, we use rebounding roles, chaser, spacer, erasers, or if you just don't, what I would call check and just make eye contact with the player that you're guarding, then that's a violation. You're off. You don't have the opportunity to get a stop. Just instantly measuring that one thing, you're going to get players that are locked into rebounding and doing it at a much more consistent clip. Than if you were trying to measure multiple things or just talking and pleading with your team to rebound.
Yeah, good. Last one for me, playing time. Mm. Just play your better rebounders more, or reward good rebounding with more playing time. Often we talk about the importance of rebounding, but still play our better shooters more, even though there are worse rebounders. Put your playing time where your mouth is.
You know, one thing that I was going to say, before this podcast, or maybe just like a question that I was going to lead with when opening the podcast, is where has your coaching lens been tuned into more so than like maybe something that's like on the rise, it's like trending up to getting your attention? Rebounding 100% is mine. Like I will say, when I was a head coach, I didn't coach rebounding as much as I should have. Looking back, I was fortunate to have some big teams where we didn't have to really, but now, like after every shot that goes up, I'm like, oh my gosh, like we're not rebounding well enough. Like it's just, I can't get it out of my brain.
Yeah. Okay. Agreed. Same here. What's your start, bench, cut?
All right. Measure, film, cutthroat, and playing time. I mean, if I wanted to get instant improvement of my rebounding, I'm going to go with, oh man, this one's tough. Mm-hmm. Am I going all four, or I'm just going a starter here?
Let's just do starter back and forth.
Okay. I'll go measure. Okay. Yeah, I'll measure.
Okay. I'll start playing time.
I don't know. That's the one that I was debating on. I'll go, my bench would be Cutthroat.
Okay, so you're skipping over playing time, even though you thought about starting it.
Oh, I thought that was off the board now. No, okay, so my bench would be playing time. Sorry.
Okay. My bench would be Measure.
Yeah.
I was between Measure and Cutthroat.
So my, what are we calling this? Are we cutting two? Gosh, this is tough to cut these.
Okay, so let's not cut. Let's say 10th man.
Yeah. It would be Cutthroat.
Yeah. My 10th man will be Cutthroat also, though I do like film a lot. I just think in this list, it's probably going to be the least effective of this list. So I will cut film.
Yeah. So, and if I was a coach, oh gosh, this is the fun part of being a coach. So this is what I would do. I would watch film, mm-hmm. come up with a measurement from mm-hmm. that film that we're going to take to the court. One of the games I would do in practice would be Cutthroat. And then one thing that's going to guide my decisions on playing time,
determine playing time. Yeah.
Yeah. It would be rebounding. So I would really use all four of these, and that's the art of coaching, right? Is like, all right, we're not going to go do a 10-minute rebounding drill or game and expect to solve the rebounding problem. It's got to start with film. We come up with a measurement. We train it in practice, and then we establish a standard around it that's going to influence how we play in the game.
And that is how you become a savvy coach, ladies and gentlemen. Thanks for hanging out with us on the hours. We spent some hours together. We continue to every single week. I get better every time I get to learn from Mark. I hope you get better from hearing our discussion on the finer points of coaching. Mark, would a coach that's not a basketball coach have benefited from this episode?
Absolutely.
Absolutely. I agree too. And I think we're continuing to trend that way. Go check out TOC Coach as well. That's where we dive deep into the art of coaching and culture in a non-sports specific way. You're already here for Savvy Basketball. If you're a basketball coach, it's the best basketball coaching resource on the planet, in my opinion. Otherwise, we wouldn't be doing this thing. And go join nearly 700 other coaches that are our members that are trying to get more savvy in this coaching thing. We do this for you every single week. And let us know in the comments what do you want us to talk about? We'll do it. You want us to talk about strategy? This is my first time wearing a hat on a podcast. Mark said it was okay. So let us know what you want to talk about.
All right. Thanks for listening. Stay savvy.
Stay savvy.